The importance of warm-hearted treatment by healthcare providers. You're listening to Humankind. I'm David Freudberg.
I had an encounter in Washington, D.C. with a specialty practice that was anything but kind. It required the patients to come 15 minutes before the appointment, and if you didn't get to that cutoff, you were not seen. The minute you walked into that practice, there was a tension in the air. It was the only time I've ever seen a provider yell at one of his staff members.
Barbara Wallace, now living in the Minneapolis area, visits healthcare providers for several conditions related to arthritis.
It was just a very unpleasant place to be. And I went, I'm not coming back here.
I'm Health Fairview. How can I help you?
This is the Highland Park, Minnesota clinic of Fairview Health Services, a large network of hospitals in the Twin Cities area.
I don't have anything else available until Monday over there. If you're open to coming in tomorrow at Highland, I can do a 120.
Terry Werner is the system's director for integrative health and well-being.
People have choices now as to where they're going to get their care, and so there's not only a recognition but a need for healthcare organizations to look at what their patients are asking for, what they want, and what's going to keep them in the facility, because not only does it begin when they get to the door, but for some organizations, there's a struggle getting people into the door. They might have to make 8 phone calls to, you know, to get an appointment at the clinic that they want. And people aren't, they're not okay with that anymore. That's not acceptable. Patients understand that they're customers now, not necessarily patients, and they get to choose.
And how patients are treated as human beings looms large. A recent nationwide survey showed that for nearly 9 in 10 medical patients, kindness was rated the most important factor when choosing a doctor. And about the same proportion would switch doctors if treated unkindly.
In general, I feel that there's a lack of kindness in the world.
Bridget Garrett is a critical care and emergency room nurse. She's currently studying for her doctorate in nursing at the University of Minnesota School of Nursing, a funder of this program.
A lot of people come into the hospital having, you know, huge stress, financial life burdens that we don't know anything about. And they might come in hot and confrontational, and we might be having a bad day and meet them there, and that causes a conflict.
For patients coming into the hospital with a medical need, the added chore of navigating a medical bureaucracy is sometimes exasperating. People may get annoyed by the large crowd in line ahead of them at the waiting room, or when someone directs them to the wrong department. And for healthcare providers, the first task may simply be calming the patient down.
I think giving that patient the space, sometimes it's appropriate, sometimes it's not, but giving them the space to maybe get that top layer off and then saying, I'm sorry that happened to you. I'm going to do my best to help you here, and telling them. I mean, the straightforward, honest truth, as good as you can get it. You know, I could look at my screen and say, I know they sent you here for this. I'm looking at this stuff right now. Everything looks okay. It's going to be at least 2 hours. They might huff and puff, but they are grateful that you were honest about that, and that I took a moment to listen.
Some problems in the medical setting can be traced to poor organization. And sometimes what frustrates a patient is beyond the control of healthcare staff on the scene. Laura Reed is Chief Nurse Executive and Chief Operating Officer for Fairview Health Services.
I think what makes it challenging sometimes are the realities of our day. You know, the volume of our patients, the acuity or sickness of our patients, the stresses that we might have going on in the unit or even in our lives that we bring to work, because let's face it, we are holistic beings, and that all comes together. And so when you think about, you know, the patient experiencing kindness, all those things are intervening variables.
sometimes people just get caught up in the busyness of tasks. There's no question that there's a lot of factors that contribute to stress and burnout in healthcare professionals. But from my perspective, there's no excuse to not be kind.
Nursing educator Mary Jo Kreitzer directs the Bakken Center for Spirituality and Healing.
And that's why I think it's so important to teach nurses skills such as mindfulness and presence. So mindfulness is being in the present moment. If I have five patients that I'm taking care of and I'm busy running between the five patients and there's medications and there's tests and there's IVs, all kinds of things that happen, that when I am with you, I really focus my ability to be completely with you.
Having the ability to stop, take a breath at the door before you enter and give that, you know, it's unfortunate, 15 minutes directly to that patient.
Nurse Bridget Garretts.
It's maybe moving your computer screen so you don't have to look directly at it and you can make that eye contact or addressing the patient and say, you know, I do have to chart this. I'm going to listen to you and then I'm going to take a moment to chart and giving them that upfront knowledge. And then when you're done with that interaction, you know, a kind thank you for your time. It was, you know, I'm glad we got to spend this time together, and then going out and doing your stuff and starting again.
And, you know, patients notice when that happens.
Mary Jo Kreitzer.
So there's research that shows that when their healthcare provider is mindful and empathetic, patients feel that, they experience that, they recognize that. You know, if while I'm, you know, changing a dressing, you know, or changing a line, again, if I have eye contact with you, you know, if I call you by name, if I use touch, those things don't necessarily take more time, but they do require intentionality.
Is it hard to show a patient your undivided attention?
In the emergency room, yes. We have to wear the wonderful voceras that can be constantly beeping and people calling for you, but I found a way to do it, and I was complimented a lot of times by my patients and my peers for having the ability to do it. You have to make it a priority, and I cannot tell you the recipe that goes on in my head that makes it a priority, but some days were harder than others, but I felt even on those busy days where I was pulled aside, if I didn't get to spend a lot of time with a patient that I felt that I wasn't with, I would take a moment before they left to say, you know, I'm really sorry I didn't get to be in here, but, you know, I hope everything was okay, and I hope you know that Sarah down the road was caring for you.
A wish to concentrate deeply on a patient's needs motivated Kirk Butler to enter his field of critical care and anesthesia nursing. He joined the military after 9/11, where he developed a special interest in addressing chronic pain, which afflicts many veterans.
You get to focus on that one patient, and you get to monitor all their vital signs and their brainwave activity and how the anesthesia is working, and then conduct that process throughout the entire intraoperative procedure and even post-op. So that's what actually drew, you know, that was one facet of the profession that kind of drew me there.
It's paradoxical, right? Because you're drawn to that so that you can show care to the person, but the person may be knocked out to the point where they're not even going to notice.
True. But that's how you know you're doing your job well.
Of course, when patients are conscious, their underlying condition can be miserable. Kindness in that case can mean simply remaining aware that patients may be suffering, which could make any of us irritable.
When you walk into a hospital, it's very rarely for a good occasion.
Right, you very rarely want to be there.
You don't want to be there. And it's one of those things where, especially from the healthcare side, you have to be a professional and acknowledge, one, you got to have empathy for the patient, because quite often the patient is lashing out from the things, the events, the circumstances of what actually brought them there in the first place.
And from a patient's perspective, if the health providers become frazzled, a smooth flow of communication can break down. Here's Mark Behrman, a one-time insurance man who was diagnosed with a slowly progressing form of ALS. He's generally happy with the care he's received at the University of Minnesota Health System, but Mark remembers other settings where he's felt tension with doctors.
You would be defensive and worried about what you would say, how you would say it, when you would say it, and it was like a filter that you had to get through to try to get to the information that that physician was trying to provide you, and it clouded your understanding of the information. I understand where the physician's coming from, and he's got to try to give you all of his knowledge and information and education in a 15-minute window or less, and he has to use words that you may not understand, and he's thinking about so many things at the same time. He has to get through that meeting, but he also has to give you the right information. But going back to those situations, I could see where my wife and I were both sort of frustrated, and that prevented us from asking maybe follow-up questions.
It also occurred to me that I have a responsibility or a role in this.
Patient Barbara Wallace.
That I can be show kindness to them. I can come to an appointment prepared. If they've asked me to do something, then I've done it. If I have questions, I know what the questions are. If I have an issue, I've thought about how to explain it. I understand things happen. The rooms may not be available. I can wait. Don't stress out about it. Show kindness to them, and you get it in return.
Exploring how medical professionals cultivate compassion and respect for patients. You're listening to Humankind. I'm David Freudberg. For more information on this segment, Healthcare with Kindness, to obtain audio downloads or CDs, please visit humanmedia.org.
I find it curious in nursing, particularly nursing education, but this also happens in practice, that for such a deeply intimate profession and a deeply caring profession, we almost have an allergic reaction to using the word love.
Connie White Delaney in Minneapolis serves as Dean of the School of Nursing at the University of Minnesota.
So a couple years ago in our school, I had that conversation with all the staff and faculty. Love so defines how we relate to patients and each other. I find it curious we never use the word in our school. What do you think about that? And after quite a pause and some discussion, it was a turning point for the school. We talk about love in our school all the time now.
The ancient Greek physician Hippocrates, considered the founder of Western medicine, famously implored doctors to first do no harm, which is obviously a good starting point. But adding the primal human experience of love seems like a fulfillment of the healer's work.
Connection must be there for the experience of kindness to happen because the connection is about, I am listening. I am focused on you as a priority. And I think people in this experience of kindness first want to be respected and heard. Listening conveys respect. I respect you as a human being.
An approach Connie Delaney carries into her work as an academic dean, striving to be inclusive of everyone who participates in the school. That kind of bond can be powerful and therapeutic in nursing practice, especially for the patient lying in a hospital bed at a moment of distress and sorrow. And healthcare professionals sometimes maintain a certain emotional distance from that suffering, almost as a form of self-preservation. Taking each case personally could overwhelm the caregiver. But sometimes, says Delaney, it's inevitable to open the heart.
Sometimes it's crying. Although in all of our education, we're taught you don't cry with the patient.
Do you regard that as an absolute?
I think it's taught as an absolute, but in my practice, I have not practiced it as an absolute. There have been times, and I know that most nurses could share these experiences, the near-death experiences or actual death, and when the patient's alert will look at you, and if they're still able to talk, we'll say it's a traumatic injury. And I've had this happen in ICU where the gentleman says, "I'm dying, aren't I? Hemorrhaging." And I knew he was. And everyone had left his bedside because there wasn't any more medically that could be done. And I had an immediate choice to tell the truth. And I said, "I am here with you. I am here with you." And he knew and I knew that he was in the movement to pass.
What a beautiful answer to that unbelievably challenging question.
And I stayed. And I had eye contact. And I cried. Yeah.
In most settings, modern healthcare includes encounters with an institution, equipped with costly facilities and expensive and highly trained staff. In some ways, the practice of medicine is a complex business, as we're quickly reminded when an invoice arrives in the mail. And the pressures of that business impose restrictions, especially around how much time a caregiver can devote to a patient.
I think healthcare in general can become very transactional if you forget about our purpose.
Laura Reed at Fairview Health.
And so I'm going to go back to whether you're a nurse or whether you're a physician or a provider of any sort. You go into it because you have a passion that you're going to make a difference and improve the lives of not only individuals but possibly populations. I think understanding the power of that passion and purpose and allowing people to practice in that way will bring back the heart of healthcare.
Nursing educator Mary Jo Kreitzer of the Center for Spirituality and Healing in Minneapolis.
A very good friend of mine at quite a young age had had a very serious stroke. And as I sat at the bedside, I was astonished at watching the care providers, most of them nurses, coming in and providing care to her and doing all the things functionally correct, whether it was taking vital signs or measuring this or monitoring this or changing lines. It was very, very transactional. And I was astounded at how little interaction there was with the person, the human being, you know, that was in the bed.
And by that, do you mean the limited eye contact?
Like not having eye contact, not touching, not calling, using her name, you know, calling her voice. And even when family members were there, there was interaction with family members, some, but limited. But it was amazing that even as this woman became more alert and even more able to interact, I was just troubled by how much care felt to me like it was very, very transactional. And having said that, I have to say in my career, I've seen exquisite nursing care and just exemplary nursing care. So I wouldn't want to characterize that this is the norm of nursing care. But for me, it was a reckoning. And it almost to me was a personal call. For how do we get nursing and nurses as a profession refocused on the essence of what's most important?
Yet so many factors can intrude. The heavy requirement for electronic record keeping, the accelerated pace of lives in general, the reality that in a clinic, time is money, which someone in the organization will be called to account for. But it feels like something easily gets lost in that shuffle.
You might think of it as common decency. Caring for people as whole persons, attending to body, mind, and spirit, being relationship-based and person-centered. You know, recognizing the innate capacity of the body to heal and supporting those, you know, inner healing processes. So they're very basic principles. And sometimes when I find myself in like large organizations and giving like talks like nursing grand rounds, after I finish my presentation, I'll say to sometimes these very senior nurses that are out there, I'll say, is this too basic? And they'll shake their head, sometimes sadly, and say, no, this is what we've lost in healthcare. This is sometimes the things that we have forgotten or we neglect to do because we're so busy doing the functional, transactional things.
Sometimes at her talks, which she gives all over the world, Mary Jo Kreitzer cites research on which conditions foster the smooth functioning of organizations, especially those providing healthcare.
One of the major findings is that what really made for the most effective team, the best team, was kindness. So in those teams where people treated each other with empathy and with caring, that actually was, you could say, the secret sauce, you know, that made the difference. So I often, you know, tell people that in healthcare organizations that, you know, when you leave this room, the next patient you take care of, the next coworker that you meet, how you choose to interact with that person can have a really big impact, and it can have a ripple effect.
We know the tremendous pressures that providers are under in contemporary healthcare settings. And it's not hard to imagine that sometimes tempers flare up at work. So appropriately resolving conflict among colleagues is part of establishing a peaceful atmosphere where kindness can flourish.
If you and I are in an encounter, and if I'm just in a reactive mode, I might act in a negative way. I might send that angry email. I might verbally, you know, be aggressive. What mindfulness teaches is that when you say whatever you said that kind of put me in that place that I was feeling angry, I notice how I'm feeling. And I actually notice that I'm feeling my heart is pounding. I might feel flushed. I might feel a little, you know, upset in my GI system. And that is a gift, because the moment of noticing is the moment of waking up and having a choice in how to respond. Or am I going to just pause and choose to even respond later?
And that capacity for mindfulness can be a vital support for nurses and other health professionals in their own self-care. Working in a high-stress profession, where sometimes life and death are literally on the line, requires a focused commitment to being kind to oneself. Again, Nurse Bridget Gerrits.
This is the million-dollar question in my life right now. I struggle as a solo mom of three to find time for myself, so I have been able to set aside, I dedicate Thursday nights to doing absolutely nothing. That means I don't even do the dishes, only what I want. Sometimes I go to bed, sometimes I read.
I practice journaling.
Nurse Kirk Butler is part of a program empowering veterans to become leaders in their community.
So I've always found, one, it's always good to kind of, one, relive the moments of your day, but also exercise a little bit of gratitude when it comes to, you know, your life, especially when you're stressed. And it kind of puts a smile on your face when you look back on some of those things that were affecting you a year ago and realize that they're no longer an issue. So you see the progression. I think with the rigor of the program too, I almost depend upon not only journaling and showing gratitude, but I have like this immense network of family and friends that I know I rely on, and they're fantastic. And I don't know, couldn't do it without them.
I own my and accept responsibility for my own self-care, and what works for me may not work for many other people. So here are some examples of mine. I meditate a lot. I make sure I have adequate sleep almost 100% of the time. And I love peace and solitude. And if you will, emptiness. So emptiness in the mind, so that time to be quiet, just silent, is so healing and energizing.
Connie Delaney, Dean at the University of Minnesota School of Nursing in Minneapolis. You're listening to Humankind. I'm David Freud. Studio recording by Antonio Oliart Rose. Editorial assistance from Kathy Graham and Ken Rogers. Webmaster Brian K. Johnson. Special thanks to Nancy Rosenbaum, Crystal Barber, Jake Kavicki, Kelly Knox, David Cruz, and Tony Buck. Our program is presented by Human Media.
Our web address is humanmedia.org. Humanmedia.org.
And you can subscribe to our free weekly podcast, Humankind, on public radio, available at Apple Podcasts and elsewhere. This segment, part two of Healthcare with Kindness, is Humankind program number 273.
The executive producer is David Freudberg. This is Humankind.